Hi, my name is Suchakra. So what we are going to talk about today is visual tooling for advanced system analysis. It's about those things in your system or things in your code which you would not usually see. And once those things, like those small issues which you're going to face, they just cry out to you, now you see me too. You know, it's like when visually you see all that stuff and you suddenly realize, ah, okay, that's it. So that's what we're going to talk about. You know, I'll explain it a little bit more later. So I'm Suchakra. I'm a staff scientist at ShiftLeft, Inc. We are a security company. I did my PhD from Dossel Lab at Polytechnic Montreal. I love tracing, security, and most importantly, I love poutine and samosas. Yay! So two things from the other side of the world. Okay. Which actually means that I like potatoes. So you have a small set of ingredients, you know, and we just visually inferred what I like from all these small sets. So this kind of like explains what my talk is going to be about. We'll have lots of data, okay, and we just want to actually understand and analyze that data and visually represent it so that we get satisfied. Okay, that's where the problem lies. Okay, I'm Texology on Twitter, by the way. So the agenda for today is we'll understand a little bit about humans and perceptions, how everything came into being, how visualizations were important, the history of it. We'll talk about software systems visualization, the subset of these visualizations, a small taxonomy, how to gather data, store and visualize it, some examples. And then some samples of flame graphs, flame charts, and timelines. We cannot cover all of the techniques, so we'll just take some samples and then demos and future stuff, what's coming next. So let's get inspired a little bit. This is the first visualization I would say a human had ever created. This is 40,000 years old from a cave in Sulawesi, Indonesia. And this is where we are right now. I mean, look at this stuff. 40,000 years old, stuff which we were able to see. And this is from CERN. It's a lead-lead collision visualization of probably, if I remember my high school physics properly, it's like small electrons or stuff colliding on lead, and you try to see the patterns, like where they're going. So we have been able to go from the things which we are not able to see, which we were able to see, things we are not able to see, and we still visualize them. So this is kind of a small inspiration. I'll give you a small historical perspective. One of the first line charts that we ever saw, one of the first bar charts that were done, and this is 1350, that's long back. One of the first spatial charts started with the shipping industry when we wanted to visualize space, which means actually cartography. One of the first timeline charts when we were able to understand space as well as time, and then we were able to visualize this. And one of the interesting factors in this graph from 1769 by Joseph Priestley is colors. Do you see the importance of colors here? So, and then by William Playfair, this brief historical imports and exports from America, one of the first line charts. And this is important statistical data. So before that, probably statistics were not that important. Okay, but when we reached here, this was like raw real data being represented. So this is maturity coming right there. But this is not a talk about data visualization. If you want more of that stuff, I have some links here. You can just go and check them out. What this talk is about is a subset of those, which is software and systems visualization. So let's start all of this again. Let's get inspired again. This is the data coming out from your systems. It's a trace of kernel and user space, one of the processes. And this is just a small subset of it. Even if I gave you 1,000 screens in front of you, you would not be able to fill this text. So our inspiration for this talk is we have to move from here to here. It's the same data, just represented visually in such a manner that we are able to actually understand it, we are able to infer stuff from it. So we'll reach there. Before that, a small taxonomy of analysis which I just came up with. So if you consider software being developed, so one of the first stages would be conception, when the software is written, code. When we try to analyze code and just compile code without even executing it, this would be like structural analysis of software, you know, understanding its graphs, etc. The second would be live analysis, when the software is actually running, when it's being executed in production. You would want to understand that. This would give you behavioral and execution analysis of the software. For example, live traces or sampled CPU usage. You know, these kind of things are live analysis. And then there would be post-mortem analysis. Your software died, okay, and now you want to do a post-mortem on it. So this would give you behavioral execution because you have all the states of the software saved with you, the traces, all of them is with you, and you would want to find out the root cause, why this incident happened. So that would be post-mortem. I really like the last one, actually. So so it would give you root cause analysis of, for example, abnormal latency. Now, what's the process? What's the whole process? In all of these three factors, what's the whole process? So what's the process of going from a problem to actually an insight about the problem? So everyone's smart here. So you'll raise a question whenever you see something. So for example, a programmer is making a bunch of syscalls. Where is it? Why? You'll have these questions. So the first step is to gather the data. So in this scenario, when you have lots of syscalls, for example, you would want to gather, you would want to instrument all the syscalls. You would probably want to record the stack of all the syscalls and have all of that data. It can be sampled or it could be actually traced. And once you have actually gathered all the data, you would characterize it. For example, you do frequency analysis. If you just counted how many times a syscall happened, you could just get a histogram out of it. Okay, you could do latency analysis. If you had timestamps, you would know which ones were slower, which ones were faster. If you had stacks as well as time, you could do a multimodal analysis. And after you characterize it, you chose a thing to visualize it. You know, you would choose how you want to visualize it. You would use histograms, you'd use heat maps, you'll use graphs, timelines, or whatever techniques you would use. So let's do a small case study when software is conceived. So this would just be like a small example to show you that what happens. So you'll have a question, for example, how would the code flow in a small web server I have? I'm taking an example of THTTPD here. So at conception level, which means we just have source right now, what you would do is you'll use a flag like fdump rtl expand, which gives you the RTL representation, and then you characterize it. You'll understand that, okay, we can probably get a call graph out of it, and you get a call graph out of it, you visualize it. You can also characterize it further and transform the data in such a manner that you, instead of having this big call graph, you would just condense it a little bit, and you have a Sankey diagram. So we reach from a state where we had questions all the way through visualization. And this can happen not just at conception, it can happen at live. For example, here there is a kprobe attached to some functions in the kernel which are doing block I/O, and you attach to it to just find out the latency of the block I/O. Okay, and you can actually visualize it either just as a histogram or as a heat map. We're gonna actually just take this example later on and explain how this thing works. Or, and post-mortem, you record everything in your system. Okay, everything you have recorded, and this is an example of a small web server again. You use PerfMap agent to get all the bindings, to get all the names, and then you use Perf, you get the Perf data with you, which means you have just gathered the data, you characterize it, it looks like a call stack execution, and we want to visualize it. And you choose a visualization. Here it's a flame graph. So the first step here in any of these was to question. We are all smart. I trust you that you can ask questions. How to gather the system's data? So let's take an example of actually live systems or post-mortem analysis. And for that, you would need observability. You know, a lot of people have been asking observability questions again and again. I would just say the ability to observe. Which means that there are places in your whole systems where you can actually have the ability to observe. What provides this ability is observability. For example, the lowest layer would be hardware, and you'll have operating systems over that. So you'll use kernel functions or hardware performance counters. So this would be like the source for your gathering of the data. Above that would be virtualization and containerization. You know, it can be an architecture like that. So for that, you may use kernel functions again for the guest OS or hypervisor or some custom APIs provided by container systems, logs, etc. Above that would be your applications. Then you would use library functions. You'll use syscalls, ltrace, strace, or whatever you want at that time. And then above that, the smaller unit now for these applications would be functions. So you would want to have function visibility, so you'll just hook onto application functions. And then these small functions would be comprised of instructions. Here you would want to actually just look at calls. You would want to look at branches in your instructions, so like actual lower level analysis. It can also be logic. If you are too much interested, you can use a logic analyzer, plug it in your pins, and then try to analyze. That's also a layer of observability. And even subatomic particles, seriously, that's true. It's not a joke. You can, if you just look up side channel attacks, and you'll see that without even touching the system, you are able to actually understand keystrokes. So this kind of stuff is like real Hollywood stuff. Anyhow, let's move on. So data sources. So for system level analysis, you can have functions, static tracing. It can be dynamic tracing. It can be performance monitoring unit events directly coming from the hardware, branch misses, cache misses, instruction counts, and all that stuff. Hardware counters. So perf is a tool. How many of you have used perf? Yeah, good. So perf allows you to do you to get all that stuff. Hardware tracing blocks. Right now, perf also allows you to get data directly from the hardware tracing blocks inside the newer CPUs, which are there. Kernel logs, for example, for security, you would just want to look at LSM logs, audit D logs, and you'll see the alerts, and you know this would be kind of the thing you would want. And for applications, it can be just high-level application logs or the traces. For example, with JUL, you can get Java logs with you. Or user space tracing, something very interesting, where you can actually use compiler assistance to get information from inside your application. So you can trace the whole execution. Let's do a little bit of deep dive into tracing. Okay, what this actually is about. I've been talking about this. And more specifically, let's look at function tracing. Because again, it's a vast thing. You know, we would want to just restrict ourselves to functions and just carry it throughout. So to observe functions, I would want to insert, for example, my function, call me maybe. You know, it's going to give me important information, and I just insert call me maybe. Maybe we can just put it. You know, like yeah, if I switch on a flag, then call me maybe is going to call. Okay. And I collect the information there. So what I do is I insert that function, which is going to observe, into the function which I want to observe. And it's going to collect the data. It's going to fill the buffer with the events. It's going to get generated. And basically, with those events, you would be able to get program flow. You'll be able to get arguments of the function itself, which can give you data flow. You can do a whole lot of stuff. You can get latency. If, for example, in call me maybe you took timestamp, and there's another call me maybe just at the end of the function. So, and this is actually something which the Linux kernel provides with a lot of other operating system kernel provides. This is kind of system which user space applications are also able to provide. So for example, let's take a kernel example. There is something called as kprobes, which allows you to insert yourself into almost any kernel function. It replaces the first instruction with a jump. It goes to your handler somehow through a more complex mechanism. And you can have a custom handler or an eBPF program here. And all of this is supported now with LTTNG. The custom handlers would be supported by that. How many of you know LTTNG, by the way? Yeah, nice. Linux Tracing Toolkit, next generation. It's supported. So these kind of handlers for kprobes are also supported by eBPF right now. Moving on, let's take the user space example. So if you compile your C, C++ applications with finstrument functions, what the compiler does is it inserts some hooks into the entry and exit. And what your application can do is actually hook onto these entry and exits, and it can take timestamps, it can take whatever, like the address of the function, it can take the call site address, and store all of this information into certain events. So for example, for LTTNG, it takes timestamp, it takes call site addresses and address of the function, and puts it into like a event buffer, and that whole of the thing is just dumped to a very compact binary format called as CTF, common trace format. So when you try to understand, so this is this common trace format, these huge binary blob that you had just generated. When you try to actually look at what this contains, you'll see like a whole bunch of traces with you. So these are actually the traces from the small web server that I was talking about. And it gives you timestamps, the time delta, it gives you the name of the event, and the whole payload, what the event contains. And we'll soon make sense out of all of this data. Moving on, we can use eBPF with kprobes also, as I was mentioning, which means that here, this would now be an eBPF program, which you can define from user space. And this gets attached to the kernel function. And then the kernel function, whenever the kernel function executes, your small program is going to execute. It's going to collect its data and send to some special buffers like a trace pipe, or it can send to the perf buffers for analysis later on directly from the user space. You should go and check out IOVisor BCC. And this is actually this small, you know, the program which I'm talking about. This is this small BPF program. Just completely written in Python, and it actually hooks onto sysclone and prints hello every time. You know, just imagine, like a small Python program which is giving you so much observability inside the system. Moving on, what are the formats of storage now? We just talked briefly about CTF, the common trace format to store data in a very compact fashion. For other systems, for example, for distributed traces, you could have scaled storage of any kind of time series data that is coming. It can be just wild logs, but timestamped. You store all of them in systems like OpenTSDB, Graphite, and Flux, and then actually consume them in a very nice graphical manner in Grafana. We are talking a little bit more about lower layers here, which means individual applications and kernels. So here, for these high-frequency events coming out from the lower-level layers, a compact storage is very nice, which is, for example, binary formats, such as those given by perf. Or CTF, common trace format. You can have graph storage if you are doing source code analysis. A good friend of mine, Fabian Yamaguchi, invented CPG, the code property graph. You can have custom data written in JSON, for example, user space function trace, which looks like exactly like ftrace, is able to store data in JSON, which you can consume later on in viewers like Catapult. You can have your own custom traces. I actually did a small trace for hardware myself and wrote it in XML directly. So you can have that also, and it gives very nice visibility. So characterization and visualization. So how do we characterize this data that we have gathered, and how do we visualize it? So there are some means to do that, and I have just listed a few of them. For example, if you have latency, like function latency, or you have density of functions, for example, syscalls here, you can then generate an histogram out of it, and then later on generate a heat map out of it. For latency of syscalls and then visualizing it with time, it would look more like a scatter plot, you know? For throughput and resource consumption, there would be line charts always, any entity on the vertical axis and time on the horizontal axis. And per entity, for example, per entity events, for example, for individual processes and the states of the processes, you could have a timeline or a Gantt chart. We'll see some of them very soon. Summarizing of all the events, you can have pie charts, donuts, or bar graphs charts for that. Function graphs, if you are really interested, my favorite stuff. You can have time. So function graph for time, you can have flame charts. Function graph for counts, you can have flame graphs. Time, as in like it, the time is always going to be extended, and you want to have a function graph out of it, so you'll have a flame chart. Simple call graphs, you can just have a graph. You can have a tree map or a sunburst. Let's take an example of a latency histogram. So this is, again, a small BPF BCC tool, which is available on IOVisor BCC. It gives you block IO latency, the stuff which I just talked about. How many of you remember the first few slides? Everyone's zoned out. Okay. Anyhow, so this is that block IO latency, which gives you the latency of block IO devices. You just run this small Python script, and it gives you this nice histogram. Of, for example, here you can see that there were 1572 calls where the latency was 1572 times where the latency was between 128 and 255 microseconds. So this is a nice histogram visualization. It gives you a lot of information. Moving on, for more information, if we have a histogram like that, this is the same one. If we have a histogram like that, and we are taking a snapshot of this histogram again and again, so we'll have multiple histograms with us. And there's something interesting here. We'll have some outliers, or the distribution may not be like a unimodal distribution. So in certain cases, averages is not a good scheme. We need to come up with a new scheme. So the new scheme here would be to encode the counts as colors. Okay, you just, for the highest, for example, count, we just encode it as a certain color. And we just take all of this together and print it line by line. So all of this individual histograms are being printed as they are being generated. So for example, per second. And as we generate it from the top to the bottom, we are able to see. So this is like a cross section of this, an example. So and we'll see like this complete heat map. So this is what we call as a heat map. And we can visualize outliers in certain cases like that. So averages are not good here. You can easily see patterns when you use heat maps like that. This is actually generated from BPF, by the way. More heat maps. So there are other folks who have used BPF again to generate heat maps, and not just BPF. There's like Honeycomb, which is now having higher level heat maps also. This is not very low level. Netflix is also using that, as I understand. So there are these more latency visualization links that I have just given you. You can just read about them. And heat maps are not just for latency. You can also see utilization heat maps. There's a link down there. You can just visit that. Moving on to some more flames. Okay, so from maps to now flames. So visualizing a function graph as a trace, as we collected a trace of all the functions occurring, so we try to visualize a function graph. So this is a tool called UFTrace, which allows you to get the function graph of a user space application. And it relies on compiler-assisted instrumentation, as I explained. If you have F instrument functions in your while you were building your application, UFTrace is able to hook onto that. It can also hook on to if you have dash PG. So it can hook onto that and record with timestamps all of the functions as they were executed. So it's like huge call stacks that were there. So this is obviously not a good way to understand what's happening inside the system. Instead, you can just convert all of this to this, like a nice flame chart. So this is what we call as a flame chart, where this axis is the stack depth. As the functions execute, this would be the depth, and this would be time. So understand that this is time, which means that as the application continues to execute, and as you had collected the traces, this would keep on going on and on and on. So this is a very nice example of how a flame chart would be visualized. Another thing is flame graph. So a graph differs from a chart in a manner that here the horizontal axis is actually population or the count, how many times a function occurred. So here, while the width would give you time, here the width would give you how many times the function occurred. So this is very good for profiling. In fact, this is multiple requests which were given to a small web server, which I just gave. And I recorded the complete execution throughout the system. So it gives you understanding of system level flame graphs. It gives you understanding of Java applications. It gives you an understanding of the JVM layer, so the complete application layer itself. And this thing is not new. Okay, there were flame charts before flame charts were actually being done like this. So there were more flame charts. And this is a tool called Performance Analyzer, which Sun had, I guess, developed. And this is from Sun's JVM, which they were using at that time. And this is garbage collection and understanding of how a flame chart view could be generated from that. So you would get at each point, you would get a complete call. At each point here, you would get a complete call stack of what was happening. Similar views could be obtained using dtrace and Solaris's kernel. So these are kernel level flame graphs. Flame charts, not graphs, again, which means that these are three individual CPUs, actually four. These are three individual CPUs which are actually loaded right now, and you could see at a given time what was the stack on that. So this is pretty interesting. So we have covered flame charts and flame graphs. Charts can be sourced from Chrome traces. They can be sourced from LTTNG traces. It can be sourced from UFTrace, as I had explained to you. And flame graphs can be sourced from perf events these days. It can also be sourced from EBPF stack traces, because EBPF now supports getting stack traces during execution, or LTTNG traces. So LTTNG supports like both of these modes, the charts as well as graph. And then moving on to another way of hierarchically representing data, it's call graphs. So Valgrind is one of the old tools. Anyone remembers Valgrind? Oh, someone uses it. Wow, that's awesome. Okay, it's pretty slow. You just want to actually use it only, you know, just to analyze on the sidelines. You don't want to use it in production. So because it actually modifies the binary first and then executes it. Anyways, a long discussion for some other time. So Valgrind gives you actually live call graphs. While the thing is executing, you could actually analyze the call graph for that. There's another representation, tree map, which it tries to give, because you can understand that call graphs are going to expand. You know, when you have huge, huge number of calls, this is not like a perfect representation. On the right is a sunburst graph, which is also good for representing hierarchy in your systems, which is not always that good. For example, do you think this is big or this is big? Actually, the outer rings always visually look big, okay, but they're smaller, you know, because like this is like 15 GB or something, and this is like 14 point something. So it's like something horizontally which you have just twisted. So now you have to think about angles also, and not just horizontal things. So this is not, I don't really enjoy this kind of view, but sometimes I do. For example, if you have shorter versions, shorter call stacks, it's very nice. And if you want to count the layers, then it's very nice. For example, just looking at this, you can understand that there's a depth of directories here. Okay, so in those sense, I like this kind of visualization. Moving on, some new stuff, which you may have not seen. There's a view which is called as control flow view, which developers of a tool called Trace Compass have named it, which is basically a timeline view, which looks like a Gantt chart. Not exactly Gantt chart, but I just call it timeline. That's why, because on the x-axis, there is just time. And on and these individual sections represent individual states of the application. For example, for an application wget, you could understand whether it was in user mode at some point of the time, it was interrupted, it was again back in user mode, and there was a syscall being made by the same application. And you can do that even not just from the perspective of an application, you can do it from the perspective of a resource. For example, CPU. On this CPU, there was a, it was running user mode code. Now it was running, it was processing a soft IRQ. Now it was running again user mode code. So you could have stuff like that. Or from the perspective of, you know, I mean, if you have the CPU, then you can always understand IRQs. And then because this is time, then you can actually individually identify how much time all these individual states take. This is pretty interesting. Another extension of this kind of view is a critical flow view, which was actually developed by a friend of mine, Francis Giraldo. And he did a critical flow view, which means that now from this is just from all the applications which may be running on your system, you'll have a timeline like this. But in critical flow view, you could actually identify the critical path of execution of an application, which means that you could select select the process that was running, and you could just follow it. And as you follow it, it will tell you how it interacted with other applications and what it was doing while it was interacting with all the other applications. So this is something pretty interesting. I'm going to show you actually visually, which is right now. So this is the tool called as Trace Compass, which is able to visualize a lot of traces. It can visualize flame charts. It can visualize flame graphs. It can have sources which are either CTF traces coming from LTTNG, perfs traces converted to CTF and then being visualized. It can also understand PCAP traces. It can understand your custom XML. I mean, you can even define your own trace format. You can define how you want to process that trace, everything in XML, and then you just feed it to it, and it would be able to visualize that. So let's do this small demonstration. So the mouse pointer, always evasive. Here it is. So on this side, what you are seeing here are these individual traces being loaded. Yeah. Can you see an experiment there? Yeah, so I have loaded two traces below this. One is user space, one is kernel, which was taken at the same time. And these both traces are for an application while it was running called THTTPD, which is our server actually. And I was loading it with AB, the benchmark. I think it's Apache Bench or something like that. So I was just loading it with that, which means I was stressing the application. And this is the complete execution of like 29 seconds of what happened in the system. Immediately you see like there is a big syscall. You take your mouse pointer there, it gives you a small tooltip. It says, yeah, it's a system call. It was on the first CPU. It was syscall entry IOCTL, okay? And it was being made by this process called as LTTNG session D. Okay, and then you have other processes which are there. So you see these small, so let's come back down from this control flow view and try to see it in this call stack view, which is actually the flame chart I was explaining you about. So which means that this is horizontal axis here is actually time, and these are the call stacks. So most of the time there were just this function which was running, the top level function, and it was running this below. It was just polling and waiting for connections. But some activities here, yeah. So you see some of the activities going on here. So what we can do here is try to zoom in and see what's going on. Well, that's pretty interesting. That's like more calls were being made. Okay, let's zoom further. And at the same time, we are able to see something here. You see? There is an interaction going on between THTTPD and AB. So something is going on here. We'll see what all of this is. But let's just focus right now on this flame chart, which is the call stack view. So maybe somewhere here a new connection was made and then this stressing started. So you can see it's kind of a repetitive process which is going on again and again, again and again. And then it kept on going on at some point of the time. But we want to understand what was exactly going on. So for that, there is a view here called as critical flow view, which I was explaining you about. So in this critical flow view, I have already started, like right-clicked on AB and followed it to see what AB was actually doing. And after doing that, you get a view which is like that, you know. You see AB is, in this phase, you see AB is constantly interacting with THTTPD. We can zoom a little bit more and see individual interactions up to nanosecond scale. So here you can, and all of these views are actually synchronized, which means if I select sections in this, they would all be shown above. So in this section, we can zoom into now what was happening. So AB, so below one is what? Can you just tell me? It's THTTPD or AB, this one, this text. What's that? THTTPD, okay. I don't have it mirrored here, so I'm just looking there. So it's THTTPD, so this one may be THTTPD, yeah? So we can zoom in here and actually see what was running on the system. And now we have individual states. This is what I was explaining about the state of a process. So we can see THTTPD states here. There was a tooltip, wait for CPU. Okay, at this point it was waiting for CPU. Now there is, and at this point, what's going on? Oh, there was an interrupt. We can go in the resources view here, and we'll now see, oh, there was actually an interrupt here on the first CPU. And if we go back here, we'll see that, yeah, this thing was probably running on CPU 0, I guess. Tooltip, CPU 0. So we see there was, yeah, an interrupt on CPU 0. What kind of interrupt was it? Yeah, it seems it's a soft IRQ, whatever number, network. Okay, so it's 3. So basically, we get these time-synchronized views. We can understand what's going on inside the system. We can even have a system called density, which gives you histogram for like a given section, which you have already like this complete view, which is with you in this span of time. If you zoom out, for example, it will give you density across the whole calls of the system. You have system call latency versus time, which is like the scatter plot, which gives you. So one of the interesting things which actually I found out yesterday was there's no syscall going on here. You see? So I just select that and I see, oh, because there's a blocking syscall somewhere here. So it's being blocked. Anyhow, so basically you get the picture of what we have. And whatever information you can, whatever views you can get, you can just click on all of those views and you see. You can just see all of them being populated. So for this whole time, you can have CPU usage view. So you can understand that how much CPU was used when this small section, which is our actual loading, was going on. You know, so it can give you like detailed synchronized CPU views. Well, I hope you enjoyed the demo of Trace Compass. Coming back to the slides. A short note on colors. We have seen lots of colors. I mean, even the UI on the tool is not perfect. We all can agree on that. But a short note on colors, and when you are making tools like that, how would the colors probably would be? So the trend of colors is like three pronged I have seen. It can be a diverging trend. I mean, think of it as temperature. It can go from minus something to plus something. Okay, so heat maps are good if you have like a diverging trend like that, which gives you a certain kind of information. Sequential trend, where there is a sequence, for example, call stacks. Okay, that's why you may have seen in Brandon's flame graphs, always it's like darker colors and then going towards light. It's like the same kind of thing. It's the functions, and you want to represent functions. So sequential trend is good in that. You can mix sequential and diverging trends or sequential and qualitative trends in between the flame graphs. For example, in the flame graph which we saw a green somewhere in between, which means it's a Java process. So this kind of thing can also be done. And I told you qualitative trend is distinct entities. It can be process states or timelines that we just saw in the demo before. I'll just switch back to the demo to actually show you that if you have these, if you have this view of timeline here, then there is this button here which calls legend. Is this the legend? So you can have these different colors which identify different states. So this is qualitative again. Yeah, so what's next? What's coming next? So here's my personal wish list of a tool which is gonna give you as much detailed information as possible. It should first of all have pluggable sources, which means that it should not just restrict itself to a single source of data. It should be everything, you know, data coming from the kernel, from the user space, coming through different mechanisms all the way into the system. And those systems should be pluggable. You can have data from kernel coming now, and then suddenly a new channel which has data coming from, I'm a low-level guy, so I think from like the probes perspective. I want to see stuff like on the CRO, different channels. Okay, so you need to have these pluggable sources with you, and a way to visualize those pluggable sources to merge the content coming out from those pluggable sources. There should be distributed system support. There is no escape from that. We cannot just restrict ourselves to our small boxes and try to analyze stuff. So there should be distributed system supports, data not just coming from computers nearby, but coming from different geographies altogether. Diffs of execution. This is something which I really would want. You know, Brandon, I think, tried to show differential flame graph, which means that you see an execution once, a whole call stack, and then you have another execution again, and then you want to see the diff of what happened between those executions. This would be something interesting. And it's actually also a visualization challenge. How would you visualize this differences? You need to have time synchronized views, stuff which I just showed you. This is really cool. You want to see while investigating in one of the views, you want to actually see what happened in the other one so that you can quickly jump back and forth from that to make your inferences. Summarization of events and observations. Whatever events that are coming, you should have like small summaries of it. Sometimes that kind of thing is interesting. I think Trace Compass has some summaries. What's this tab? Statistics? Why cannot I click that thing? Oh, okay, because there's a window here. Okay, so you have statistics. It just shows it in pie charts. Maybe they can be more beautiful. I don't know. And these statistics would change based on like how many events were there in the selection. I don't know if we select this. Yeah, probably the events in selection changes. So I would want to have such summarization of the events. We don't want to drill down from the lower level. We want to see stuff from the high level and then just drill down and see what's happening at the lower levels. Yes, and then intuitive UIs, we need better user interfaces. There should be filtering support. This is very interesting. So if you remember in the morning talk by Sasha, he said that perf data is like 19 MB per second. And I'm going to tell you, hardware trace data is not just 19, it's like 200, 300 MB per second. I've seen it in front of my eyes. Like 3 seconds of trace, half a GB. And so you cannot always consume that amount of data. It's like generating data for one computer and using 10 computers to analyze it. So that's not efficient. You know, you cannot build stuff on that. In some cases, you would want to do that, but not always. So we need filtering. The filtering can be done at the end level, which means here we collected everything in the system, and then we, in our visual tool, we were able to filter it. Or it could be done at the source level. So preemptively, we try to understand that we just want only these kind of events, and we only want these kind of events when this happens. eBPF is a good tool, and you, if you are following that line of thought, then you would already know that with eBPF, you could actually filter out in some of the tools that just record open only if the file is this, if the mode is this. You know, so in that case, you have some amount of filtering which is done with you. We may need at some point of the time to have hardware traces, I mean seriously, which means traces coming out directly from CPUs. You know, that's like really high-level stuff. Oh, I should say low-level stuff, but it's really interesting. And in fact, like some of my work was on this, so I'm just going to butt in and show you that also. So I tried to visualize what hardware traces would look like. And because I don't want to record hardware traces for all of the execution, and it's only for that specific execution, so I just collected trace of from Intel processor trace using the Perf tool. Perf now supports getting hardware traces. And I took a snapshot when the mmap syscall was being called, while another tracer was running, and while nothing was running. So the syscall took a fast path, and it took a slow path, like its other path. And I just visualized them on these flame burst charts. And as I was explaining you previously, for these short visualizations, it's pretty good, you know. And most importantly, I just look at the number of layers, and it gives you an insight on what was going on. You know, a bigger stack would mean like a lot of layers are being added. So, for example, here I was able to, with this kind of granularity of processor trace data coming, I was able to see it was like 173 nanoseconds and 917 more instructions. I went on further and actually used the tools like Trace Compass, which you saw previously, and I converted the trace data coming out from those hardware traces into actually XML and wrote a small XML analysis, and that was able to generate us these kind of nice interactive visual views. So this is kind of the first time hardware trace data can directly be visualized in these newer tools that you have. So for, just to give you a small context here, so these are vCPUs, which are for a VM. So this is a trace collected while VMs were running. And what we are trying to do is, without going inside the VMs, without looking even at the host, we would want to understand what's happening inside the VMs. And with hardware traces, you can actually. So I have given a reference to this work in the end. So these are four vCPUs, which were all pinned onto the to a single physical CPU. So you would see they were like switching in between. So it's because the load was running on actually a single CPU. So this is a resource view. It would show how those data was going, how execution was happening on those individual CPUs. This is the process control flow. It's exactly like the view which we saw previously, which means that three processes are there, and they were running sequentially again and again and again in a loop. So this is kind of a visualization of how hardware traces may be used in newer tools like that. There are some references. We have reached towards the end. It's time to wake up now. Some more references about visualizations and some research papers for those of you who are in academia or who are interested in reading these papers. Thanks to LTTNG, eBPF, and Trace Compass developers, especially to Jean-Vierre Bassier, Mohamed Jebai, and Francis, the whole Shift Left team, because I'm here, and Dorsal Lab at Polytechnic, some aesthetically pleasing logos for you. That's it.